This is a Collider.com audio interview.
Am I right? Was Dick in the Box nominated for an Emmy this past week?
It was. Who knew?
When did you find out? Were you waiting up for the...
No. I've been on the road doing press for this, and I got... All of a sudden, I woke up, and there were like 20 texts from people being like, "You got nominated for an Emmy!" And obviously, we didn't even realize that was a possibility, so... It was cool. It was, yeah. Like, you mean for a song about putting your dick in a box? But yeah, it's pretty cool, man. It's very ridiculous.
Don't you have several shorts nominated?
Or I don't think so. That's the only one I've been alerted about.
So you had no idea when that was becoming a sort of phenomenon that this could be a possibility?
Not really. I mean, you know that SNL is up for stuff and that there's the chance there, but. I think maybe Mike Shoemaker, he's one of our producers, had mentioned it to us once or twice, like, if there's a category for song, but we did Lazy Sunday the year before and nothing happened with that, so we figured it was just not.
Are you guys going to perform it at the Emmys, you think?
If they ask us to. Dude, call the Emmys. I'm game. I would love to go do it. I did it at Madison Square with Justin. That was pretty sick. I'd love to redeem myself, though, and not be out of tune so much.
Why do you think that became so acclaimed, though?
I don't know. I mean, you got to think it's because Timberlake's singing on it, and he's a hit maker. You know what I mean? Like, that guy just doesn't make a bad song, really. But I don't know. I guess the world was really at a place where they wanted to hear a song about putting your dick in a box.
I was actually going to ask you, what was the experience like at Madison Square Garden performing?
It was trippy. It was the one thing I always say about it is, like, while it was happening, I was thinking to myself, comedy guys don't get to do stuff like this. You know what I mean? Like, that's reserved for, like, cool dudes with, like, real talent. And, you know, we just kind of backed our way in there, and it was weird. It was like 18,000 screaming ladies. So it was like how I always imagined it would be in high school when I was sitting in the park by myself. Yeah, exactly.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but this script has been around for a little while, right? Before you guys got a hold of it. Now, yeah. You guys write, so when you have a script like this, how much do you change it for your sensibilities?
Well, it was written by Pam Brady. She co-wrote the South Park movie and Team America, which are like two of our all-time favorite movies. And it was originally developed for Will Ferrell.
Right.
I guess it was like 99 or something when she originally wrote it. So it definitely had been around. So just on that alone, there were adjustments we had to make because it had been, 6 years.
Right.
So a lot of other movies had come out and sort of things had been done since then. Like, if you actually read her original script, there's so many movies that came out since she wrote that she was ahead of the game. It's, like, actually kind of crazy. But, the first thing we had to do, obviously, was make it something that I was comfortable performing, and so it didn't seem like I was just doing a bad Will Ferrell impression. And I think we got away with that. And then, from that point on, it was more just making it something that Akiva was comfortable directing. And as we went along, we never stop writing on anything we do. Like, all the way up until as we're shooting, we're throwing stuff out there. And so we threw every idea and weird bit that we had into it, and while staying true to the original idea and characters that Pam had put in place.
So was the Footloose inspiration montage in the original script, or was that something you guys came up with?
We added that.
And what was the inspiration? Just reading, like, we need a Footloose montage?
No, like, many years ago, me and Akiva were just watching Footloose on cable, and I was like, this scene is amazing. Like, the idea that a guy is so angry and furious with rage that he has to dance. And we actually, like, me and Akiva and Yorm have written a bunch of other stuff together, and we had that scene and a few other things before that obviously never got made, but when we got to our ride, I was like, we can do the Footloose scene!
was the stepfather a subplot? Was that all part of it from the beginning?
Or? Yeah, more than anything. That was Pam's creation. The whole idea, the thing that hooked us on her script originally was that you've got this sort of standard story of, he's a guy who's got to, grow and overcome his thing to save his stepfather, but so he can kick his ass. You know what I mean? It's not just and he's going to save him because he loves him. It's like, he's going to save him because he fucking hates him. You know what I mean? Like, just the twisted logic of that. Like, we always like leaps of logic in terms of what's driving the story. We feel like that's a lot more interesting to work with.
How interesting was it to have that kind of relationship with Ian on screen, because he was so antagonistic with him?
Right.
What was it like working with him?
It was great. He's like actually a really dapper, sweet man, you know what I mean, even though he's really good at playing badasses. But, you know, he would play around with it. Like, even today when he showed up, he was still running the game of pretending like he liked Yorm more than me. And just making me so mad! But, I don't know, with him, like, the second that the three of us met him, it was just, like, instant ease. Like, we just got along with him really well, and he totally got what we were about and was into it, which we could feel. It made us much more comfortable.
Making that leap from SNL to the big screen can be really tricky.
Right.
What sort of examples did you take or learn from other people who have and have not so well done it?
I don't know that I would cite any specific examples, but all the ones that we've liked are people who really stay true to what they're about. Like, they don't, you know, there's obviously different levels of types of comedies in terms of, you know, how much you're paying attention to story and heart and then comedy. And we, all of our favorite movies are a lot of times people's first movie, where you can tell it's this sort of explosion of random weird crap that they've been saving up their whole life. Like, you know, movies like The Jerk or Billy Madison, Ace Ventura, stuff like that, where it's like Pee-wee's Big Adventure, like just crazy balls movies where they, you can tell they had all these ideas and they were just like, screw it, let's just do it. So we wanted it to be something like that. And I feel like for us and for what we're about, I think we did a pretty good job.
Well, so then how do you make sure your next one isn't, I just had a list of examples of the bad, the Little Nickies or
right.
Cable Guys. You know, how do you make sure you
a lot of people think
Cable Guys is classic.
Yeah. I love Cable Guys.
There might be like a beat down in here. You guys all have my back on that one.
But you know what I'm saying?
If yeah, I mean, it's...
You're right about the first one is that explosion of randomness. How do you make sure you don't lose that going forward?
I honestly don't know. I'm going to have to see if they even let us make another one. You know what I mean? We're kind of just focusing on this. But it's tricky, you know? Like, for people who I look up to, they've all gone through ebbs and flows in their movie career. And, I mean, now that I'm actually in it a little bit, I understand the desire to do something different. Even as early as now, like, having done this movie. I think, personally, I feel like I want to keep doing weird stuff and I don't feel like I've really proven myself in terms of comedy yet. Like, I'm proud of the stuff we've done and proud of this movie, but all I've ever wanted to do is comedy, and I think that takes a lot of hard work and dedication for people to really figure out what you're about and respond to it if they're going to. So you got to really stick with it, I think. But eventually, who knows? You know what I mean? Everyone experiments and has missteps, but that's part of just growing up and working in the industry, right? I think that's just kind of how it goes.
Did you guys film the movie last summer?
Yeah, in Vancouver.
Did you guys try and fit more SNL cast members into it? Did it just become like a process where it's like too difficult to find a role for certain people, or were there people trying to like up from the show wanting to get in the movie too?
Right, right. No, I mean everybody was really cool about it. They were just like, "That's so awesome! You're making a movie!" Like no one's like, "Put me in it." Also, because I think pretty much everyone at the show right now is working outside of the show. Like the whole cast is awesome, and they're all being rewarded, which is pretty cool. You know, with roles like Hader and Parnell, like, they just fit. It just fit perfectly into the movie. And, you know, Hader had done that character for me the first time we met. He's basically just doing a friend of his. And that whole acid story is a true story. Like, my Rod character is Bill in real life. He went to pick up his buddy, and he had a huge thing in his eye and was, like, super calm about it. And that was, like, the first story Bill ever told me. And so when we got on the movie, I was like, dude, we should do that Bill story. And obviously it worked out because we cast him as the guy. So, and Parnell is, like, we did Lazy Sunday with him, and we just feel like he's amazing and maybe one of the most underrated dudes in comedy, and we felt really lucky to have him. I feel like he kills it. I mean, he just shows up and lights up the movie.
I was just going to say, obviously you guys shot other material that didn't make it into the movie.
Yeah.
Is there an R-rated version of this movie somewhere that, like, we'll be seeing the uncut hot rod?
Yeah, I mean, hopefully we're going to throw a lot of stuff on the DVD. We haven't got a chance to start on that yet, but, you know, PG-13, you get one F-bomb. Mm. And just for safety's sake, I think we shot, like, five or six. And, you know, sometimes they just kind of happen. But yeah, I mean, there's definitely a lot of weird stuff that got cut out. But not really because we were contained by the rating, more just because we were looking for a nice rhythm in the movie, and a lot of that weirder stuff was slowing it down in a way that kind of hurt it overall, we felt.
I was going to ask you what you've been doing since the hiatus.
This. We've What's been, up? I mean, as soon as SNL ended, the three of us were very heavily involved in the editing and the sound mix and the sound design and the color correction. Like, we're very hands-on dudes, which can be a little bit maddening at times for us because there's no breaks. But we basically were trying to edit in all our off weeks during the season. The season ended, we went into finalizing the movie and all those aspects. We basically did that, and as soon as that happened, I started doing press and went on the road. I think I've been on the road for like 2.5-3 weeks right now.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. That's it.
Do you guys ever get worried? Like, I mean, obviously there's a lot of scenes that are outlandish. I mean, kind of the point of the movie. But, you know, when you're taking a joke, like the cool beans part, or
right.
like the riot scene or whatever, do you ever get worried that these things are, like, a little too out there sometimes, or that the joke may be missed because people are completely taken back by this repetition or just whatever the joke might be?
I mean, yes and no. I mean, we're definitely aware that when you do something that's as strange as, say, cool beans, that some people are going to be like, what? You know, like, and be annoyed. Like, this isn't taking itself seriously at all. Whereas for us, it's like, this thing isn't taking itself seriously at all. Like, that's the joy of it. But I mean, it's interesting because we sat in on the test screenings and stuff as well to help us in the editing room to figure out what was playing and what wasn't. And pretty much every scene in the movie that I would describe as my favorite part, and a lot of the audience would mark down as their favorite part, was someone's least favorite part. And I think that's just a byproduct of being memorable. So when you're listing something and you're like, well, what do I remember? I remember that song, you know what I mean? But it's definitely hard for certain people to let go of this is the real world and crazy things can't happen and the fourth wall can't be broken down. But on a personal level, like, that's always my favorite thing. Like, anytime you make something that is encouraging ridiculousness and surrealism and, like, taking things less seriously is my favorite kind of comedy.
In the 80s and 90s, I guess the comedy movie situation was like one funny guy in a movie. It was Eddie Murphy or somebody, right. Adam Sandler was the one funny guy. The last 10 years or so, we've sort of seen it go back to a group of funny guys.
Right.
And this movie is a good example. It's,
yeah.
You know, you're the star, but there's all these really funny people around you.
Yeah.
Why do you think that's changed? What do you think has sort of changed for audiences? They want that ensemble thing?
I'm not sure. I mean, I can tell you from the creative side, it's just that we know so many awesome people. Like, I don't want to... If I'm making a movie and I know I've got this friend who's hilarious, I want to put him in there. Like, it's just going to make everybody look better. I don't know that the public necessarily prefers one to the other, but one thing I will say is when I'm watching a movie, I'd much rather see a movie where everyone's funny than one person because you just have a better chance of laughing more. And, you know, of course, movies like, you know, Knocked Up and that kind of stuff, and Anchorman, obviously, is like, everyone in Anchorman is hilarious.
Right.
Like, it's, once that tone is set, it's hard not to want to keep it up like that.
But do you think you're coming from a different place, sort of comedically, because you and your whole generation sort of do the ensemble thing more than maybe the previous generation did, or?
Possibly. I mean, it's definitely a lot of nice guys that really like each other, you know what I mean? And girls. But, like, it's been interesting. A lot of people talk to us and they want to sort of pit everyone against each other.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, young people sort of starting to have success. And they're like, so what's going on with this competition between High Rod and Superbad? And we're just like, what competition? You mean our good friends who are in Superbad and Bill who's in both? Like, we want both those movies to do great. We love everyone in that movie. I saw that movie. It's amazing. Like, it's more for us just like this fun collaborative moment for all of us, and we're kind of in it together, and we
right.
bump into each other places and go, dude, can you believe this is happening? Like, we're on billboards. It's so fucking weird. Like, it's not as interesting of a story, but it's for us, it's just like, yeah, it's just cool, you know? And I've described it to like the cast at SNL as well. It feels like this Muppet generation, these kids who grew up on, like, sort of happy-go-lucky, good-time stuff, who don't have a lot of demons, and are just kind of lovers of comedy and fans of stuff, and it's all really exciting and positive for us.
Who really inspires inspired you early on, and when did you kind of get an idea that you were funny? I mean, who were the first people you were entertaining, and what material were you using?
I never knew for sure, like, what the rest of the world would think of me in terms of being funny. I knew that my family was really crazy, like, goofy, silly family. We would always be making each other laugh. And so I would gauge my funniness on how much I was making, you know, my sisters laugh. I have two older sisters, and I developed the style of annoying them until they laughed, basically.
Did you pretend to be a certain, you know, comic actor, or were you just kind of just doing your own thing with them?
Just kind of doing my own thing, which, by the way, I feel like I'm kind of still doing. Like, I'm not really, like, an impression or character-y guy. Like, every character or impression I do on the show even is kind of some shade of me. But, you know, I'm a goofball, so it works out.
So goofball,
I mean, I was trying to make jokes in class at school as early as, like, first grade. And I wanted to be on SNL since I was, like, 8. So I locked into comedy very early on, and my parents always tell me that even as a baby, I was constantly laughing and giggling. Like, I'm just a laughy kind of guy, I guess.
You talk about being so hands-on. What do you do to relax?
One more question after this.
Thanks.
Ooh.
These boots are made for stomping. I'm kind of attracted to that, by the way.
I know.
She's working me. She's working me over this time. What was the last one? I don't
remember.
What do
you need to relax?
Oh. I try and sleep whenever I can. I love sleeping, and I'm not getting enough of it. But, you know, I go out and have a drink or two and go to a movie. I'm really into music. I do a lot of CD shopping and now even iTunes shopping, which is not as exciting, but sometimes you gotta just get that shit into your iPod. That's pretty much it. You know, generally my free time now, I just try and catch up with people because everything's been happening so fast and we've been so busy, it's like I don't want to lose touch with anyone. But drinking. In moderation.
Have you thought of any more ideas for your digital shorts coming up? Or
laser cats?
No. Dude, I certainly hope so. Laser Cats is one of my favorites. We haven't conceived anything yet. Generally, we come up with digital short ideas on Thursday or Friday, to be totally honest. I mean, towards the end of the season, we were coming, like, the making out with the dog one and the Shia LaBeouf one where everyone kept getting shot. Like,
yes, that was good.
Those were written Friday afternoon into evening. And then everyone had to scramble and, like, find a location for us. We shot them till, like, 2 in the morning on Friday night. And Akiva and Yorm would stay up all night editing for the show on Saturday. Like, it's... A few of those were conceived, shot, edited, and aired in under 24 hours.
Wow.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. But I like them. I'm proud of them. So it's, like, as long as it keeps happening where we don't feel like they suck, it's kind of hard to get out of that habit.
Yeah, I'm the crazy lurker.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah. You know what sketch was really good, which is underrated, was Sofa King.
I agree.
I brought it up with Shia.
Did you?
Just like, I'm like, can you tell me the story behind it? Like,
Sofa King, cheese!
I was laughing about that for days on my own. I thought it was fucking amazing.
How great was Hader?
I know, when I got it, I was like, oh, thank you.
I think it's phenomenal, and I don't know why it didn't get picked up the way a lot of the other ones.
I totally agree. I love that.
Not very proud. It's
Steve Higgins wrote that. He's one of our head producers. It's hilarious.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Yeah.
It really is.
I'll tell him you said so.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye, guys.
Bye.